Hey, Gabby.
Hey, Anna. Welcome to our final episode of this season of the JLV Showmream podcast, made exclusively for our most generous and committed supporters.
That's what this podcast is all about. This is one way we are saying thank you to all of you who joined Showmream this year. Because of your support, JLV is empowering families every day to make Judaism meaningful and relevant for themselves.
As you know, in each episode, we explore different ways Judaism impacts our lives. You can download materials for all of our episodes on our website at jewishlearningventure.org/podcast. Today, we're going to talk with one of my favorite teachers, Rabbi Michael Levy, about his unique journey to the rabbinate, his life during the pandemic, and something that he thinks about as a modern miracle.
We are so honored to have you, Rabbi Levy. Let me introduce you to our listeners. As a founding member of Yad HaChazakah, the Jewish Disability Empowerment Center, Rabbi Michael Levy strives to make the Jewish experience and Jewish texts accessible to Jews with disabilities. In lectures at Jewish camps, synagogues, and educational institutions, he cites Nachshon, who, according to tradition, boldly took the plunge into the Red Sea even before it miraculously parted. Rabbi Levy elaborates, quote, "We who have disabilities should be Nachshons, boldly taking the plunge into the Jewish experience, supported by laws and lore that mandate our participation." Rabbi Levy was the director of travel training at MTA New York City Transit. He is an active member of Congregation Eish Kodesh in Woodmere, New York. Rabbi Levy, welcome to the JLV Showmream podcast.
Thank you so much. And I also want to thank the Showmream, not only for this opportunity to share some thoughts, but also an opportunity for me to revisit certain life experiences and to gain perspective on some experiences that I'm having now going for the COVID vaccine.
Well, Michael, we are thrilled to have you. And I want to begin by asking you about something very interesting. JBI International, which is the Jewish Braille Institute of America, featured you as the first person blind from birth to seek the rabbinate. How did you feel about that?
Well, it sounds like a compliment. This happened when I wasn't even a rabbi yet, but there is a downside to it. What it does is it makes blindness the central feature. What about saying the first person as Ray Park High School to seek the rabbinate? And what it does is it's still isolating. And the question becomes really, if I weren't blind, would I even be featured by them? I don't know the answer. I understand why they did it. You raise money that way, but it's still isolating.
Wow, that's a really helpful frame for those of us who may not have been called out in that way and isolated in that way to hear how that felt. Can you tell us about some of the foundations that enabled you to eventually become a rabbi?
Yes, well, we got to start way back at the beginning with two heroes that I didn't honor enough or appreciate enough during my life. And they are my parents. And I urge anybody out there who still has parents to look at what they did right, because I was always looking at the other things. In any case, my parents discovered that I was blind when I was 3 months old. And they had, at least for my mother, 3 days of agony. And my father stayed home from work. And they decided that they would treat me just like my older brother. No segregated environment for the disabled can hold a candle to the rough and tumble family stuff that happens. You know, the cry of the sibling and the family, it's not fair, okay? And, you know, there's food fights, then my sister was born, there's two ganging up against one. I'm sorry, Robbie, but you as the older brother were the one that ganged up on. But there's nothing that can replace it. And I'm going to give you a little perspective from Talmud here, because I think it's extremely important. In Tractate Sanhedrin, at the beginning of the tractate, I'm not going to go into the whole story, but basically, if you want to offer a sheep on the altar in the ancient temple, you can't do it if it has a blemish. You know, maybe it's a blemish, maybe it doesn't, maybe it looks like one, maybe it's only temporary. So how do you become an expert in sheep blemishes? Well, we know because Rabbi Chia, he decided that he wanted to be such an expert, and guess what he did? He spent 18 months living among the shepherds. They told him about blemishes. Now, a lot of people call themselves disability experts, and we who have disabilities, we're the shepherds. And I'm saying this in anger, not at you or the shomrim, at the world. If you haven't spent 18 months getting to know us and hearing our input and what we think, and if you spend money on us not even caring for what we have to say, then you are not a disability expert. And how dare you come in and advise parents who have their own expertise? How dare you come in and tell them what they should do? And there are two implications of this, and I'll finish this very quickly. One is looking at the individual experts, and the other is you need to decide whether you're going to fund people just because they claim to speak as experts. In my parents' case, very early on, they get a very healthy dose of how to treat the experts. When I went into kindergarten, there was a doctor who said that I needed glasses. So from then on, you know, yeah, you're the expert, but I'm going to watch you and see, I'm going to see what you have to say.
Michael, I think it's, you know, amazing that you point to your parents and that they are really the source that enabled you to eventually become a rabbi. So you attended typical public elementary and high school. We're curious, what was the source of your interest in Judaism?
Well, there were two things. First of all, I'm not an athlete and I didn't consider myself as popular. And when you're in public high school, you want recognition and glory. And I felt deep down, I resented the athletes and the popular people because they got the recognition. I felt like I was in the out crowd, although I wasn't, it was how I felt, okay? The second thing was our conservative temple, Temple Beth El. They had an organ and a choir. And a rabbi with a beautiful singing voice. He was the cantor, really, officially, but the Hebrew school principal, he had a simpler voice, but it had a ton of heart in it. And I'm sure that the Shomrim have met people that say, I don't go to that temple. I don't like the way they do the administration. I don't like the rabbi. I don't like the membership fee. I don't like the seating. People will find anything to complain about. But luckily, nobody says to God, you can't or you shouldn't go to that temple. God will darn well say, I'm going to any shul or temple that I want to. And so I found him in Temple Beth El. And then because of that, I joined the United Synagogue Youth and I started to see I do have a niche. USY values people who are not athletes and not popular. And so I became much more serious. I would guess I had a little rebellion to say, turn away from high school and say, feh, you know, I'm not interested in high school anymore in that way. And my poor parents had to suffer through that rebellion. You know, how can you yell at a kid who's rebelling by becoming more religious when his colleagues are smoking and joyriding and whatever. But I do apologize to my mother because it broke her heart that I did not go to those Ivy League schools.
So I understand you were actually accepted at Harvard, Princeton, and Brown universities. Why did you decide to attend the combined program of Columbia School of General Studies and the Teachers Institute at JTS?
I wasn't a strong Jew in those days. I needed a support group. And right or wrong, my Judaism became more important than how much money I was going to make. Then I got a letter from Harvard that said, why did you refuse to come to Harvard? And I thought, oh my God, maybe I did make the wrong decision. But I don't, now looking back, I needed to make that decision. I needed a Jewish nurturing environment. And therefore, I didn't think that I would get it at these other schools, especially in those days. Now it's different.
Did you face challenges, Michael, as you became more serious about Judaism?
Yes, I did. And I'll talk about two of them. One of them was that if you're blind, you cannot get to all the material that you need to get to be a serious Jewish student. People tried valiantly to help me. I had a reader named Tress Levinson. She was an angel. May she rest in peace, who from the beginning of my career at JTS when I was an undergrad, all the way through till the end of rabbinical school, she would just read and record, and she knew Braille, and she would just walk into the library. I need this book. I need this from the rare book room because Michael needs it. And what could they say? And sometimes I ended up having clearer text than every other person in the class, but still, I couldn't look up stuff on my own independently. And before I went into rabbinical school, before I went into Teachers Institute, I had a wonderful remedial total immersion program in Hebrew, and I loved the language. And the guy who was leading us sat us down under a tree once and said, in order to really be a Jewish scholar, you have to have all these books. And he listed like almost 100 of them. And I felt such sadness and such shame that I couldn't do that. My mistake was I should have walked up to him and said, Danny, what would you do in my case? And then in rabbinical school, there was a professor who said, if you can't handle the text, then you're just a social dabbler. And again, I should have gone up to him and said, what should I do? I left out a very important third step, an intermediate step. Once you read the text and before you teach it, it has to go through your head. You have to say, how am I going to approach this text? Where's my audience? What's going to be relevant to them about this text? I had to learn that myself. Maybe if I had spoken to people, they would have told me. But that's where I am now. When I read a text, it starts percolating in my head. Okay, what's going to happen to it? Let's see. And that actually leads, unless you have other questions, it leads into the COVID situation.
That's perfect, Michael. Tell us about your experience with getting the COVID-19 vaccinations.
Okay, so there I am. The way I do it with shots is I say to the guy, do 1, 2, 3, and after 3, you inject me. So that way I know when the pain is coming. So I suddenly realized this is the most important shot that I've ever gotten in my life. What should I be thinking? And unbidden, a verse came into my mind from Proverbs 9:11. Ki vi yirbu yamecha v'yosifu lecha shnot chayim. Through me, it's as if the COVID vaccine was talking to me. Through me, your days will increase. Your days will increase and years of life will be added to you. And I actually was quite disturbed you know, God runs the show, not the vaccine. And so I started looking at this text. And really what the commentators said, they also realized the problem in their way. It isn't wisdom that, in Proverbs, it's wisdom that's talking. In other words, you know, if you follow wisdom, then she'll do all this for you. And the text also had the same problem. Like, it isn't wisdom. It's more like, well, if you study wisdom, then you will be motivated to come closer to God and you will obey him. And then he can have a basis for helping you live longer. Or when you study wisdom, it'll take you away from stressful things and you'll be able to be calm and that will help you live longer. Or you'll see how to prioritize your time and you'll see what's important and what's not important so that whatever days you live, you will fill them with more important things and less trivial things. And that's kind of how I reconciled it with that first thought. Now, by the way, I personally believe that Torah does this for people. In other words, and I'm not preaching, I'm saying more like, if you get to know some Torah, sometimes it comes into your life and helps explain things. And sometimes things in your life help explain Torah. But let's go to the second vaccine, which was yesterday. So yesterday I got there, it's same place, Columbia Presbyterian Armory, and it was quite different from the first time. The first time it was people were like running around, what do I do? Where do I go? Who does this? Who gets the arm? Who waits with you afterwards? When can you leave? We got to get this sticker, that card. Wait, where's the card? You know, that kind of thing. When I went back, it's amazing what 2 weeks can do. There were, at that time, there seemed to be almost more volunteers than patients. And like, wait, we got a customer. You know, so this guy, Eric, stayed with me all the way through the vaccination process. He helped me. I needed the restroom. He escorted me there. Then he said, well, I'll escort you to the subway. And then we were going out. He saw that my mask was slipping over my nose. He said, this is not a good mask. I'm going to get you another one. And there were volunteers all the way home. Okay. And when I was getting the shot, here is the thought that came in. Ki malachav yitzavelecha lishmorcha b'chol derakecha. And he will instruct his angels, his messengers, it could be both, to guard you on all your ways. And by the way, lishmorcha, to guard, is the same root as shomrim. I just wanted them to know.
Nice. Michael, that is the most beautiful story, both vaccine one and vaccine two. I'm so happy for you that you have both of your vaccines now and that you are well enough to join us today. And that beautiful line from Proverbs 9:11, for those who are listening, you can go to our webpage at jewishlearningventure.org/podcast and you'll find the text there.
I have one more thing to say.
Please.
And that is that, think back to what I said about how different organizations treat people with disabilities and think about the possibilities of what could be done if money were spent in the right way, not on sheltering us, but on having us step out, okay? You know, again, remembering we're like you, we have the same goals as you do. We want to lead, we want to work, we want to earn money, we want to give back. We want to be on the boards that fund us, you know? And so I don't end this as an appeal for money. I'm going to tell a joke. Is that okay?
Please.
Okay. So this very rich guy who had a great business and all of a sudden he started losing customers, and there was nothing he could do right. He went to England, he went to France, he looked at all the podcasts, and he called in all the government people, and they gave him advice, and he followed it, but nothing worked. It just kept getting worse and worse. So finally, he wasn't a religious fellow, but finally, out of default, he said, I'll find a rabbi, see what he has to say. So the rabbi was kind of surprised to see this kind of California fellow showing up who had never set foot in a synagogue. And the rabbi said, what can I do for you? He said, I'm losing my money. I don't know what to do. I've asked a million people. They can't tell me. The rabbi said, here's what you should do. Get a Bible. Get in your car. Go down to the beach. Go get to the by the ocean where the wind will come in from the ocean, and open the Bible, and it will riffle the pages of the Bible. And then at some point, as winds do, it'll calm down. And then look on that page and see the verses and see what advice will come out of those verses. There, I guarantee you there will be something. So the guy doesn't believe, but what chance does he have? So what choice does he have? So he goes down to the beach and he does the experiment. And sure enough, his business starts coming back. And 6 months later, he comes into the rabbi and he's handing the rabbi $100 bills. Please take this, take that. You know, the rabbi says, thank you, thank you. You know, you did the experiment? Yeah, it was perfect. I went to the beach, and just like you said, and I looked at the page. So the rabbi said, well, what understanding did you get from the page? So the guy said, it was right there, chapter 11.
Very good, Michael. It took us a second to get it. That's a good one.
That's fantastic. Michael, thank you so much. This has been an incredible experience. I could learn with you all day long. You have such incredible stories to tell and so much wisdom to share.
Well, I've enjoyed being in contact with both of you. And maybe we'll get a chance to learn together another time.
I would love to.
We also want to thank all who have joined our show, Mareem, and are making the work at Jewish Learning Venture possible.
And thank you for joining us on this new podcast journey. It's been so much fun. We hope you've been enjoying it, and we'd love to hear from you. Please tell us what you thought.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.